Hi, I'm Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report. That's right, Pamela Anderson is a fan. She just DM'd me on Twitter this morning, said she'd love to be on Kaiser Report talking about saving the whales and some other cool stuff. So, Pamela, you know, it's just a matter of time now. Ha ha, this would be fantastic. Yes.
That will be fun. I think we have to go to Malibu for that, though. I want the beach.
We're
going to
be in Malibu.
That's
coming
true.
Up very soon, next couple weeks.
You know, one thing about Max Kaiser that many people don't know is that you started, I guess, very, very early teenagers, early 20s, working at a magic shop, and you worked for an illusionist, and illusions are in our headlines today. So I think you, as an expert on illusions, who did you work for, the Maximilio Landano?
I worked in a magic factory that made magic tricks for Maximiliano Landano. He's a famous South American magician. This was back in the 70s, late 70s, near Times Square.
So like the Deuce.
Near the Deuce. That's right, near Times Square. It's actually on 42nd Street, not far from Bryant Park. They had his factory, and we made mouth coils, very famous by Maximilian Landano, and a lot of other kind of cheap plastic magic tricks. Until one day I showed up to work, and he had disappeared.
Cheap plastic magic tricks is actually a good headline for this episode, because first headline is a tweet. The pool of negative yielding debt has risen to a new post 2017 high of $9.2 trillion. Mind-boggling at a time when the global economy is supposedly still recovering. This is the market value of Bloomberg Barclays Global Aggregate Negative Yielding Debt Index. So as you see, negative yielding debt is rising, which suggests that in the real world, outside of all the magic that the central banks are, like the brilliant illusions they're putting forward for the population, that the real people behind their curtain, the bankers, are terrified, and they're willing to lose money on lending at a negative rate.
Well, up until recently, the idea of a negative interest rate was considered a financial impossibility, an economic impossibility. It had never been tried for in the history of economics or finance in hundreds of years of such existence of the modern economic reality that we can go back to Adam Smith and The Wealth of Nations back to 1776. Actually is when that book came out. And there's never, ever been a try before of a negative interest rate. So it's like, they also discovered in the world of physics this past week that they've proven time going backwards, right? So up until recently, that was considered an impossibility. And yet now we have a proof of a quantum of physics of going backwards in time. This is the same thing as a negative interest rate. It's a impossibility. But yet it's there because it's a fancy way, effectively, of confiscation. So banks are imploding, they're dying, they're zombies. Instead of allowing them to die as they would have or should have years ago, they've been supported with cheap rates, and now they still are not avoiding collapse. So they have to just do wealth confiscation, which is a negative interest rate. And that's coming to your bank account soon. It's a soft bail-in, effectively.
Yes, we've warned people that negative rates are coming, and that is a soft bail-in. But the original illusion, I believe, happened. You just mentioned that negative interest rates were considered an impossibility. That's because every single economic theory and great economist throughout history and economic ideologies were invented before 1971. All the Austrian school, Keynesianism, all that stuff was actually invented and thought of, and theories were proposed prior to 1971, which was the greatest magic trick of all time, was when we pulled, it was the pulling the rabbit out of the hat. It's like, look, everybody was like in awe that for the first time in history, there's nothing backing the
currency. In 1971, there was a bold experiment to try something that had never been done before either. That is to have every single currency in the world backed by other fiat money. Every fiat currency was backed by other fiat money. There was no gold. No gold was removed entirely. There was no currency in the world backed by anything. That was the first time ever in history we've had a global economy without any currency of any economy that's backed by anything. It's all backed by each other. Fiat. It's called infinite regress. So it's just one thing referring to another thing, referring to another thing, referring to another thing. And that's controlled by the Bank of International Settlements and the World Central Banks, who collude They're involved in a massive conspiracy to pretend as if the banks aren't collapsing. But the banks are collapsing, and we have definitive proof of that with the 9.2 or 9.3 trillion and growing in negative interest rates. That's proof that the banks, the central banks, and every major bank, whether it's JP Morgan, Deutsche Bank, BNP, any major bank in the world, technically is insolvent by a factor of hundreds of billions.
Are they technically insolvent? Because the fact is, there's nothing underlying anything. It's all one great big magic act. And I mean, I think what it is the magic act gone wrong. So I know you've done magic acts in Times Square. So when a magic act starts to go wrong, how do you distract the audience from seeing that the quarter just slipped down your sleeve? Like, you have to come up with something even bigger to distract them from that failure and pretend that failure was part of your magic act.
In a magic act, there is no failure because there's always a way to misdirect, right? It's infinite misdirection. And David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear through misdirection, right? I mean, the Statue of Liberty did not move, but the illusion was through misdirection that it did move. And there's a video right now of this young Chinese girl who does the famous cups and balls routine. And she's redone it in a modern way, and it's all misdirection. And she's getting millions of views. So that same trick's been fooling people for thousands of years and through misdirection. But in the world of banking, we know that in 2008, when it was time to sell some of the bonds that were on the books of these banks as a way to pay off these debts, we know that the value of these bonds on the market was not 100 cents on the dollar, like the banks were telling us, but actually closer to 1 or 2 cents on the dollar. That's how we know that that they're insolvent, because there's no market for their bonds. They're unsellable. If I can say that I own, for example, the Brooklyn Bridge, and I sell a bond against the Brooklyn Bridge, and I sell a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar bond against the Brooklyn Bridge, well, eventually somebody's going to come and they say, okay, well, deliver the Brooklyn Bridge. And I say, well, I can't. I don't have the deed. Just like in the 2008 subprime crisis, there were no deeds for the houses that Goldman Sachs packaged as collateralized mortgage obligations and then sold into the pension market and the wholesale derivatives market, because they didn't have the deed. They were just making stuff up, pulling rabbits out of their hat and selling that as a yielding security to pension funds. But there's nothing there.
All of this misdirection and the infinite misdirection, as you refer to it, is they need you to believe that the dollar is good as gold and therefore the global fiat system. And we have these central banks now buying their own debt. Japan, the Japanese government owns something like 42% of their own debt. The Japanese central bank owns 42% of the government debt there. So they're buying their own debt to keep you, the citizen, thinking that everything is okay. And one of the things about our participation as, ordinary, the bottom 99.9% of the population, is this notion of meritocracy, that it's all free market and that, Jamie Dimon's a billionaire because he's a hard worker and a clever guy and exceptionally clever. And he uniquely is clever. It's not the free money from the Fed giving him, behind the curtain of the Magic Act. It's his unique cleverness and brilliance and leadership qualities. And the same thing, it reminds me with this huge story going on in America of all these elite colleges. If you're smart enough, and you can get into Harvard or Yale or Duke, it's fair competition. This is a way for you, your ordinary middle class lifestyle, to compete with the children of the Rockefellers and the Clintons and the Bushes. Like, it's all level playing field, right? And what we found is that, in fact, there are side doors. Almost everybody in America has to go through the front door of a university. This is what it's called, front door, side door, and back door. The front door is for the ordinary Joe. You have to take your SATs, you have to take your ACTs, you have to take all these standardized tests to show that you're worth getting into Duke. But the very, very wealthy, the super wealthy, are allowed the back door, and it's considered legal. If they give $10 million to Duke to build a library or $20 million, then it's natural that their children could then go to Duke University. But we now have this situation where all that time that all these people are getting, telling their kids, they have to study, they have to take extracurricular activities, you have to compete. And there's been an illusion this whole time for the last 20 years while people are racking up students now of over $1 trillion in debt outstanding that is non-dischargeable, by the way, that they have, it's been a fake competition. There was no competition. There's been a side door available only if you have a couple hundred thousand per child extra to bribe somebody.
And how does this relate to fiat money and central bank policy of creating infinite quantities of fiat money to keep fake banks afloat? And because they were using, as part of their bribes to get their kids into these schools, shares of stock.
Some in Silicon Valley, of course, right, they gave Facebook shares.
And other shares. And these shares have been pumped up by quantitative easing and stock repurchases that were financed by quantitative easing and money printing by the banks. So it's a direct correlation. If you were to stop the money printing, the fake fiat money printing, to keep insolvent banks from having to declare bankruptcy, it would therefore remove the wampum, the funny money, the bribe money, the fake, all this money being used to this huge college admission scandal.
But I want to say that this is also that infinite misdirection you talked about. Is there's a huge press conference, FBI perp walking all these celebrities, because to the ordinary bottom 99.9%, they seem like super powerful people when they're not super powerful. They had to use a side door. They couldn't even afford to use the back door. It's $25 million that the Department of Justice is saying, this is a huge scandal that we've broken. But in fact, the back door is allowed to stay open. Right now, a lot of people, and we see this with millennial voters wanting people like AOC in office, is, there's a rage against the inequality and the rigged machine. People are starting to not believe the magicians up on stage. So they have to start perp walking some people. And that's going to be those, if you're using a side door, if you're rich, but not like at least worth $5 billion, $10 billion, you might end up being perp walk soon.
Okay, well, another side story here is that the idea that the banking crimes, it's all a victimless crime. It doesn't matter that all these banks like J.P. Morgan have had to pay hundreds of billions of dollars in fines for a criminal activity that they should have gone to jail for because there were no victims. Well, what the parents of these students are saying is that, well, you never put Jamie Dimon in jail. You never put Lloyd Blankfein in jail.
True.
You never put Wells Fargo in jail, Bank of America in jail, right? There's obviously no law in America if you have, you pay a fine. We'll pay the fine just like the banks paid the fine. How can you dare now accuse us of committing a crime and not apply the same standard to all these white-collar crooks on Wall Street? Right? So it's not just about the underprivileged saying there's a two-tier society, two-tier law system, the younger, the poor in America, but now the rich in America are saying why shouldn't we be as lawless as the bankers?
But that's what Bastiat warned. This is why we're in the situation we are now. Bastiat warned that if you have corrupt people at top, it trickles down and the entire economy becomes corrupt. Everybody is going to bribe to get ahead.
Right. And the way around it is to introduce sound money. You have to have sound money. You have to have gold or Bitcoin as your unit of account, as your store of value, as your medium of exchange. Or if you allow one group of people to print infinite quantities of fiat money and then use, and through the Cantillon effect, able to just buy, there's a Hamptons rental this summer for $1.5 million just for the summer rental. Right? That money is just printed out of somebody's bank account. It doesn't, they didn't come out of the economy. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this. Don't go away.
What politicians do is something we don't do. They put themselves on the line. And they get accepted or rejected. So when you want to be president, why would you want to be? Why would someone want to be president? What's it like to be president? What's it like when the phone rings at 3 a.m? Can't be a good call. I'm interested always in the whys and the hows.
And cue Larry.
Question more.
You are fighting a war against racism.
We have been around gunshots, people getting murdered, drugs all our life.
They come from very rough communities. Young people are deciding if they want to be not like their parents, not like their neighbors.
What do we want? Justice! What do we want it?
The blacks always struggle school-wise, gang war-wise. We always have problems.
But you and I are going to focus on the Glock. It's the most ubiquitous gun out there. Most police departments use it.
Almost every student in the school felt that they could get their hands on a gun within 24 hours.
We were teaching these kids about racism, about police brutality, taking pride in who they are. These kids are a part of history.
Welcome back to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to turn to Carl Denninger of MarketTicker.org. If you're looking for this on the web, it's market-ticker.org. Carl, welcome back.
Thank you, Max.
You recently wrote that it won't be a repeat of 2008. Elaborate for us what the next crash will be like. It sounds like it might be worse, Carl.
Much worse. Debt levels are higher. Income has not advanced in even nominal terms by any meaningful amount. And so you have all this malinvestment that has been fueled by the Federal Reserve and the federal government's policies, all of which, by the way, is Congress's fault, because Congress is the one that enables this kind of nonsense to go on. It's not the Fed's, in you know, their own internal thing. And when the bill comes due, it's going to be absolutely unpayable. We are looking at sometime in the next 4 to 6 years, Medicare exposing the entirety of their underfunded status to the federal budget in the form of deficits. And that is approximately a 75% underfunding. So you're going to have roughly $800 billion. It'll be a trillion by the time it gets there, a year that's going to just magically and instantaneously appear in the deficit numbers.
We'll get to Medicare in a second. I wanted to focus on something you said there about malinvestments, and I think this is a point that needs to be talked about a little bit. In other words, all this fiat money that's being pumped into the system to keep these insolvent banks alive, it has some corollary effects. It has some ancillary effects. I would point to, for example, this recent college admissions scandal involving some Hollywood celebrities, where they're throwing around millions of dollars to get their kids into school, and they're using, in some cases, inflated stock price, stock shares that were inflated due to stock buybacks. That was a malinvestment, and another malinvestment. And the corruption just kind of seeps into the economy as a whole. People have been saying for years, well, why should we care about these banks and their bailouts and all the crimes they commit, because it's a victimless crime. But it has a very insidious effect on the society, Carl. Your thoughts?
You look at all of these so-called mavens of the New World, to steal something from Jim Cramer back before the 2000 blow-up. They're all extractions and extortion schemes. Take, for example, Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, and firms like them. The company that allegedly has all this value, has created all this value, takes no risk. And so it gets a cut off the top. The individual driver that has a car that wants to drive for one of these organizations, he gets told what he has to charge, what kind of car he has to have, what kind of condition it has to be in. And he takes all of the risk, and yet he gets none of the entrepreneurial reward for engaging in the activity.
What you're describing there, I'm trying to think historically, you have one small group of people with access to unlimited funds taking no risks, and then you have a huge proportion of the society taking all the risks and getting peasant-like wages. Wait a minute, that sounds like feudalism.
It sure does, and you know, it sounds an awful lot like what happened just before the housing blow-up too, right? We had all these people that thought they we're getting the American dream. We're going to be just wonderful. We're going to go out. We're going to refinance 4, 5, 6 times. We'll use the money to go to Cancun, you know, whatever. And then, oops, the spigot gets turned off, and the bank keeps all the money that they stole through these fraudulent schemes, selling all these bonds off and everything else. And the person who took all the risk gets thrown out of their house.
The Fed has indicated in the event of another financial emergency, they may consider negative interest rates. And isn't this just another banking trick to keep the Ponzi scheme alive, Carl?
Of course. But here's the reality. You can print dollars, whether they're credit or physical pieces of paper. You can't print value. So if when push comes to shove, the Federal Reserve says, well, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And you need to go see the doctor because you have a thorn in your foot. And the doctor says, well, you know what? I'm not going to take that because the minute I take that, it gets discounted by the Federal Reserve by 10% because they have a negative interest rate. What else you got? And your answer is nothing. And he says, oh, have a nice day.
Heading to another crash. So is it fair to say that the 2008 financial crisis never stopped? It never ended. We just had a big multi-trillion dollar Band-Aid put onto a very corrupt banking system. But the pus and the ooze and the disease is coming out again. So presumably they will try. I mean, negative interest rates are a way to confiscate wealth directly from people's bank accounts. It's not even trying to hide it behind some policy initiative that they've created per some economic theory in some school of economics. It's just outright confiscation, Carl.
As far as I'm concerned, if somebody, you know, puts a gun in my face and says, give me all your money, I probably will because they've got a gun in my face. But if they tell me they're going to do it before they pull the gun, in most states in this country, it's perfectly legal to shoot them first because they've declared the intent to commit armed robbery. And armed robbery is a serious felony. You have the right to defend yourself against that. So if the Federal Reserve was to do something like this, I know what I believe the correct response would be. It'd be 1775, just like Concord. You know, if the American public grows a pair, then, somewhere between the 330 million of us, then we could potentially solve that problem. But I don't see that happening.
You're talking about a potential civil war, which I think, given the height of political rhetoric and it seems that there is a certain frisson is in the air, for sure. Let me ask you about this recent comment by Elizabeth Warren. She has an idea to break up the tech giants. Facebook briefly banning her for posting this idea on her page. And so Elizabeth Warren, she's brought up the monopoly card. Carl, what do you think?
Well, she's right, but she's wrong. There is a monopoly problem. There's been a series of articles written about the anniversary of the internet, and some of the people who were founders that originally designed the protocol have lamented the wonderful free open internet that we had in the 1990s and the late 1980s. And, you know, it's all gone away because of these wonderful tech giants. I think somebody's either got Alzheimer's or is waxing nostalgic for something that never existed. The real problem, Max, is the data theft that goes on and the collection and how easy it's gotten to amass these huge amounts of data and then use it to screw people. And I don't think you can solve that simply by breaking up companies. You have to put something, GDPR is an attempt to go there at the European Union level. They didn't go anywhere near far enough.
I get that it's tough to throw Elizabeth Warren a lifeline because she is not somebody that you would want to give a lot of oxygen to because overall the policies seem completely divorced from, let's say, market realities. However, the problem of monopolization in the tech sector, whether it's Apple Computer, Facebook, Alphabet/Google, it seems palpable. It seems real. There's a pricing problem going on. I mean, we've talked about Amazon, Carl. Amazon certainly is becoming a predatory monopolist now.
Amazon has been a predatory monopolist for a long time. I will remind everybody that one of the first things they did when they were just a bookseller was they spammed my customer base. And you know, I made a lot of noise about the fact that I caught them at it, and they tried to go, oh, no, we didn't do that. Well, you spammed me personally, guys. I mean, come on. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, this is a new thing. Bezos and the games he's played with his distribution centers and gaming the tax code and things like that. I mean, this is what monopolists do. But breaking up firms by itself without addressing the underlying issue, which is the collection, collation, and sale of personal information without consent, without informed consent, because you can't possibly give informed consent. You look at what happened with 23andMe, for example. You send in your DNA to get some kind of analysis, and then the firm partners with GlaxoSmithKline, a pharmaceutical company. How could you have possibly given consent in advance to that combination? You can't.
The companies are acting in ways that would suggest that they have no competition. In other words, AOL or Facebook, I'm sorry, Facebook is, I'm dating myself by referring to AOL there for a second. Facebook is, they're censoring people, with a political agenda, it would appear, because there's no competition. So, I mean, that's kind of where the monopoly situation's at. So Elizabeth Warren would seem to have a point there. We need some competition. And, I think back to Teddy Roosevelt, the trust buster. And, there was a need for a trust busting at that time. I would posit, I'm curious what you think about that. And, you get cheap prices. A lot of people say, well, they're cheap prices are cheap and we want cheap prices, so we're going to let these monopolies continue. But it seems like sometimes you got to break up the monopolies, Carl.
The law does not say that price injury has to happen in a way that you can quantify in order for the conduct to be illegal. 15 United States Code is very clear. Any attempt to monopolize, restrain trade in any area of interstate commerce or international commerce is a felony. It's not a civil offense. It's a criminal offense. And there's this interpretation floating around that people have that, well, unless you can prove it makes prices go up, then it doesn't count. That's not what the law says. And so Elizabeth Warren is correct in that the act of monopolization is illegal. The attempt is illegal. It doesn't matter whether you succeed, and it doesn't matter whether they can say, well, but, Amazon has the cheapest price on, laundry detergent this week. That doesn't make any difference.
So you're suggesting that simply apply the law. Anyway, well, we have to have you over for another segment, Carl. This is getting interesting. Thanks for being on the Kaiser Report.
Thank you, Max.
All right, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Kaiser Report with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert. We want to thank our guest, Carl Deninger. That's over there at market-ticker.org. If you want to catch us on Twitter, it's Kaiser Report. Until next time, bye, y'all.